Warning, this show may be highly arousing and distracting. Listener discretion advised.
Get ready to get titillated while being educated. Join the Queen of Fetish as I lead you into the world of sexuality while exploring outer limits of fetish, BDSM, and the sex trade industry. I'm your host, Wicked Ashlyn. Our guest opens up about their journey with rope bondage and sex addiction. Important. Rope play demands proper training and carries the risk of injury. We believe in fostering a safe, judgment-free space focused on consensual adult activities. I want you to imagine the feel of silken ropes against your skin, the tension building with every twist. Today on the Wicked Ashlyn podcast, we are delving into the intricate practice of rope bondage with renowned expert Gaio. Whether you're a seasoned, enthusiastic, or simply curious, get ready to learn from one of the best. What is rope bondage?
Rope bondage is a form of kink play between a rigger and a rope bunny that essentially restrains the person that's tied up, which is a rope bunny, by the rigger, who's the person that's doing the tying, to have that sensation of restraint. I mean, there's multiple reasons of what it is or why people do it, but essentially it's restraining one partner or multiple partners as a sense of just having control or being controlled.
And do you practice suspension?
I do, just not as frequently as I like.
I've seen Shibari term thrown around. How does this style differ from traditional rope bondage?
So Shibari is a little more artistic and it's more form over function, where traditional rope bondage is just the function. You're just restraining someone to be held in place. Shibari is more artistic. You can have suspension rigs that look like a spider web, and the person is being restrained with artistic ropes and not, or artistic knots, and being tied to the spider web of rope and different types of things to essentially make it look like a piece of artwork versus just being restrained.
Wow, but that would be interesting to look at. Are there any dangers to rope bondage, and how can you avoid injury?
Oh, yes. The biggest danger is cutting off circulation. And if done for a long enough time, that body part would have to be amputated. To avoid it is to usually keep a pair of shears. So when rope's out, shears are out. That's to make sure that whenever the rope bunny is starting to not feel sensation, and if you cannot loosen the bindings quick enough, within less than 10 seconds, if you can't loosen them up, or if they have a panic attack or get some type of anxiety, that's another issue that can happen with a rope bunny, that they don't like the sensation or they get overwhelmed, overstimulated, then they have to free it up quickly. So if you're starting off, you're just doing one or two little knots, you can loosen them up quickly. But if not, you have to cut them out.
Okay, good advice. Thank you. If our listeners wanted to try rope bondage, how do you recommend they get started, and any resources you recommend?
I would highly recommend YouTube, at least learning how to do the knots, but I would prefer that people find a mentor. And to do that nowadays, you'd have to find a fetish group or a fetish party. Easiest way to do that would be fetlife.com. Search for your local area. Look for a munch for your group. Sometimes there's munches specific for rope play for riggers to kind of teach and learn. And other times it's just kind of like a random group where you can meet all types of kinksters. There you'd kind of like introduce yourself, mention your interests, what you want to learn, and you can probably find a mentor that way.
Okay. And diving deeper into your personal life, you have admitted to having an intercourse sex addiction. We commend you for being brave. Please share your journey with us.
So my background, I am Texan born, but my ethnicity is Mexican American. So with that, with Latin culture, is machismo. Growing up, it was kind of spoken terms, the manifestation of what I was taught. You know, you take care of your family, provide for your family, and you take care of them. The unspoken rule was the benefits or the perks of providing for your family is you are free to have something on the side. You can have a girlfriend, you can have a, you know, string of one night stands, whatever it is, just as long as your family never finds out and as long as you provide for your family. Growing up, there was constant reinforcement of the more women I'm with, the more of a man I am. That, and also being an American, going to school and seeing all my classmates and whatnot, their families are like, you know, oh no, we're equal household, equal responsibilities, all this other stuff. So trying to mesh the two for what I was growing up was kind of difficult. So I tried to be the good guy, try to be a nice guy and whatnot. I was engaged to my senior year sweetheart, high school sweetheart, and found out, I think it was a month after we graduated, that she'd been cheating on me since a month before I proposed to her. Sorry, a month after I proposed to her, I found out that she'd been cheating on me for like 2 months. Sorry. That just kind of like put me in a tailspin. Like, here I am trying to be the nice guy, being the good guy, and here she is cheating on me, and I'm not getting any benefit out of this. I kind of just lost it and started sleeping with anything and everything that was available out there to me. At that time, this is in the very early days of the internet through AOL, and the internet in the early days was just new and Wild West. There's no way to kind of express now how different it was then. The best analogy I can come up with is just picture in your mind, you the listener, picture in your mind the average Tesla owner, not electric vehicle, but specifically Teslas. You know, you think it's someone that's well-to-do, has a little bit of money, kind of, you know, on the cutting edge of technology, kind of wanted to be that type of person. And so that was essentially people who were on the internet. Not everybody had access. You had to have a computer. You had to be at home. You had to have a separate phone line to be able to connect to the internet. So it wasn't like you can just pull out a phone and jump on and start talking to people. You had to set a specific amount of time to get online. Through there, there's chat rooms, there's information and all this other stuff. So through the chat rooms, I focused on people that were in Houston, in my hometown. The most common thing in a chat room every half hour or so would be ASL, age, sex, location. And because we were in the Houston chat room, then it would be 16 to 21. And again, at this time I was 17 or 18. So, you know, don't think I'm chasing underage girls. I was between 17 and 18, was online and talking to girls between 16 to like 20. Getting online and seeing these girls are like, oh yeah, Northwest or this particular town or this particular mall, this particular areas of your town, right? And like my go to, like, oh yeah, I have a cousin that lives out there. I'm going to a quince, a 15 or a party or whatever next weekend. Why don't we get together? Sometimes I would learn or figure out through the conversation that they'd be willing to meet within the next half hour. Others would want to meet within a couple of days of conversation. So it was easy to kind of juggle the different ways to talk to women and reading between the lines and learning how to communicate effectively with girls. So I was averaging about almost two girls a day. Later on, I had a friend of mine, or friends with benefits, that was a unicorn. She was bisexual and enjoyed being with other women, and she was single. She enjoyed watching me with other women. She was phenomenal at picking up women offline, too. So with her, usually Thursday through Sunday, we were having threesomes, foursomes, whatever. We would start going to swingers clubs. I didn't like them particularly because I was, I think, about 19 at that time. So we were the youngest couple there. Everybody wanted to play with us, and we're talking from 60-year-olds to, I think the next closest to our age was about 25, 27. I was just kind of like, ew, old people. Like, I don't want to have sex with them. Of course, now I'm old, but back then I was like, ew, old people, you know, whatever. It was just really a turnoff because, in a sense, you know, you have, to me, unattractive people at the time that wanted to sleep with us only because we were younger, because we were new, we were fresh, only enjoying it because, yeah, sure, it's two women, it's three women, whatever. But it was still uncomfortable being watched by the husband, or, you know, the husband playing with friends with benefits, my fuck buddy. Back then, the term was fuck buddy. So it didn't bother me because I didn't have an emotional relationship or connection to her, so I didn't care. But my ick that I got from it was that they were older and that I was being watched. It just wasn't my cup of tea. So we just go to different clubs in Houston. At the time, I think there were four. We focused on the north part of town, the one in Northwest, North Central, and Northeast. And one of the nights that we happened to go was a fetish party. It just opened up my eyes to a whole new world. I continued just sleeping with random women, had a mentor that taught me to be a dom and to be a rigger. Just continued from there. The ex-fiance, eventually we just kind of lost touch. She got fed up with me cheating on her, and I didn't really care because I had just the string of women. I didn't realize or pay attention to the fact that most of the women that I was with, it would only last a few weeks. So I would have a regular rotation of women that would normally be 3 to 5 that I would see for a couple of weeks. And then they'd get tired of either me not wanting to settle down with them or that I was demeaning to them outside of the bedroom. Now that I'm older, I realize that women in general enjoy being used and subjugated in the bedroom or in bedroom scenarios, but not outside, unless it's a specific dynamic and that's rare. For the most part, they kind of want to be treated like a human being outside of the bedroom. And I didn't care because to me, women were disposable. They were just for my enjoyment, for my pleasure. And if they didn't like that, I could find someone else. I didn't care. To me, there was nothing wrong with that. It wasn't until about 2009 that I came to the realization that I was an intercourse addict, because early 2000s, I forget when it was, David Duchovny, Tiger Woods, and a couple other celebrities, you know, said, oh, I'm a sex addict. Of course, it was after they got caught cheating on their spouse. And I thought, oh, that's just something celebrities made up so they have one more chance and don't have to pay alimony. Like, that was just kind of like in the back of my mind. Sex addiction is not a real thing. That's whatever. When I came to the realization of my addiction, I kind of had a little bit of denial about it. It was frustrating too, because it made me have to look at myself versus just, what's an analogy? So most guys in late 20s and 30s, like, oh yeah, I'm still physically fit. I can do this. I can do that. I can run a mile if I have to. I can bench press my best record I did in high school. And in that time, in our late 20s and 30s, we haven't done that in so long that we have this distorted view of ourselves that we think we are still as good as we once were. Then reality hits is like, oh wait, you know, I can't run a mile. I could probably jog a quarter mile, walk another half mile, and then just jog the last little bit. It's eye-opening to realize that you're not the same as your best or your peak. You know, things change over time. So that's kind of the best analogy I can come up with in terms of having to see myself for what I was. Went through different types of therapy. I tried a personal therapist with her. Well, actually, I had three, but the one that I stayed with the longest was female. And with her, all of them, I just couldn't trust them or feel like I could open up to them honestly, because they were clinicians. They were clinical. They understood, yes, you are an intercourse addict. These are the things that may or may not cause it, and different types of therapy to try to improve it. But I still had a resistance towards it, because to me, it was like having a conversation between an electrician and an electrical engineer. We both understand what's going on. We both know how to read a blueprint. They know how to write the blueprint because they have more knowledge about engineering in general. But I know how to do the thing. I know how to install electrical fixtures. I know how to run things by code, and they don't. So that was that disconnect that I couldn't relate to them, or they couldn't relate to me. Like, it just seemed like they didn't really know what they were talking about. They just read it in a book and were just kind of spitting it back at me. So then I tried Sex Addicts Anonymous. And SAA, at least the groups that I went to, it seemed like they were just white knuckling it. They weren't working the steps that they should. They were just kind of like, oh man, I had a flash yesterday and I was tempted, but I didn't because I didn't want to disappoint my sponsor. I didn't want to disappoint you guys. And it was more of living up to a standard rather than addressing their issues. And eventually I ended up going to Celebrate Recovery, which is a Christian-based group for all types of addicts. So food addiction, chemical dependency, love addiction, codependency, just anything that would be fall under the umbrella of addiction, they can help you treat it there. They separate everybody into smaller groups, into gender, and then smaller groups based on whatever your addictions are. In there, I was able to work the steps to kind of understand my triggers, how to deal with my feelings, how to understand my feelings, then later express them, and how to use my words essentially to deal with the issues that I have. That was 2011-ish, where I actually finished going through with all that and started as a recovering intercourse addict.
Okay. I've heard of Celebration Recovery. I know it's a good place to go to if you need help. What resources do you recommend to our listeners who are suffering from sex addiction?
I would personally highly recommend Celebrate Recovery. And granted, yes, it is a faith-based system or group, but you don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to be a particular religion. You don't have to be a Baptist or Episcopalian or Methodist. You just have to be a person that can respect their beliefs. Just not say anything negative about it, and you're more than welcome to go. It might be tiring to have to hear a lot of stuff about Jesus and hearing about Bible passages here and there, but for the most part, for me at least, it was the most welcoming, most open arms for everybody. Hey, we're here to help you. We're here to get you through this. Or you could try to find whatever your addiction is. Three or four that I know is Alcoholics Anonymous, NA, Narcotics Anonymous, and SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous. There might be others. I'm not aware of them. You find your group locators online for both, for Celebrate Recovery and SAA, NA, and AA. So for all of those, you can find a group that's in your town. If you're in a major city or in a city that has more than, I would imagine, 50,000 people, you'll be able to find a group. And if not, they also have online meetings. I know Celebrate Recovery does. I'm not aware of the others. You know, you're not alone. That's the biggest thing that's been helpful for me, is knowing that I'm not alone out there.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times when you're alone is when you have more issues with trying to overcome some things. It's always better to get help when you need it. Okay. Before we go, is there anything you would want to tell the listeners?
I think it's important to know that you're not alone. We're all in this together. We're all human. No matter who you are, you, the listener, I love you. You know, I don't care what your background is. You're a human being. I love you. And I want you to be the best version of yourself, because that's one of the biggest lessons I learned through myself or through Celebrate Recovery in my addiction, is that I am worthy of love. I am worthy to express myself. I don't have to hold my feelings in because I'm a man, because of, you know, societal norms, to live up to X standard. If you can't live up to it, there's nothing wrong with you because you can't live up to it. It's nothing wrong with you to have to ask for help. Just so you know this, I love you and I want you to be the best you.
Thank you for that. And I just want to say your journey reminds us that our desires, even our struggles, can become sources of strength and transformation. Of course, bondage, when practiced with understanding and respect, can offer a path to self-discovery and healing. Thank you for the raw honesty today. Through conversations like this, we can break down stigma and appreciate the diverse ways humans experience pleasure and connection. If you're struggling with sex addiction, know that there is help and you are definitely not alone. Any final thoughts or anything you would like to say?
Just that don't be afraid to ask for help. There's nothing wrong for having to ask. That's probably the hardest step, is having to ask. Realizing that you have a problem is eye-opening, and that could be a separate thing. But having to ask, you know, there's nothing wrong with you for having to ask for help.
Of course. I think that's probably the biggest step, is just asking for help when you know you need it. Well, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. I definitely learned a lot from you. And I'm sure our listeners did too.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. And I'm glad to, if I've helped at least one person or just opened someone's eyes, that means a lot to me.
Of course. And I want to thank you all for listening in today. And definitely thank you for coming on the air.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. And if you would like to learn more about me as a mistress, please visit wickedashlyn.com. I am finally recruiting new subs, so if you are looking into having a mistress, definitely look me up. Like I said, wickedashlyn.com. You can also find me on Twitter or Wicked Ashlyn. On my website, wickedashlyn.com, there you can find the kinks and fetishes support, how to call me, the games we play together, and my favorite part, the ways you can spoil me. Please keep checking back onto that website. It will be updated shortly with more fetishes. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And as always, keep wicked.